Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge vom Podcast Software Testing. Let's celebrate quality. Diese Woche ist die World Quality Week und wir feiern mit dem Podcast. Darum gibt es diese Woche jeden Tag eine neue Folge, damit du mehr Inspiration, mehr Motivation und ein paar neue Impulse hast, um Qualität zu leben und zu feiern. Viel Spaß dabei. Heute wieder mit einer Folge von der OOP 2023 in München. Zu Gast bei mir war nämlich Mary Lynn Manns, Speakerin, Expertin und Buchautorin des Buches Fearless Change. Ich habe mich mit ihr über die Themen unterhalten, wie man Ideen in einem Unternehmen umsetzen kann, was man mit Bedenkenträgern machen kann, warum es so viel Angst vor Veränderung und Neuem gibt und wie wir das besser machen können. Sie gibt uns auch ein, zwei Methoden an die Hand, wie wir mit Skeptikern umgehen können und Veränderung positiv unterstützen können. Und jetzt enjoy the show! Hi, Mary Lynn. Nice to have you on the show here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great. You did the keynote today of the OOP conference about change and resistance of ideas. And yes, and the resistance and of ideas is a big part of in the software testing community. We testers often go and want to do new things and want to get new tools and new methods. But yeah, it's not often easy to get them into the team and to work. And I'm happy to have you here and to talk about this topic. How can we make this change?
My favorite topic, change.
Yeah. So just to start, why maybe is it so not so easy for us to make this change if we have a good idea?
Oh, well, that's really a big question.
Yeah.
So it can be easy. Mm. You know, there's this misperception that people don't like change. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. We all make changes in our lives.
Mm.
We choose to make change and good changes. And so it's not that people don't like change. They don't like the process of change.
Mm.
And even changes that we choose in our life, still there are headaches and challenges during the process of getting from the old to the new.
Mm.
So in organizations, when you're told there's going to be a change, it wasn't your choice, then you have that extra problem of, okay, I hate the process of change because it's very, it's full of challenges. It creates a lot of chaos. And now I'm being asked to do something I don't want to do.
Mm.
So I think that's what people have to keep in mind, that it may not be about the change,
mm.
but it may be more about the process of change. And there's where organizations need to manage that better.
Mm-hmm. And why is it the process? What does it do with me if I get this, I have to change and I, ooh, and then?
Yeah, and so that was like the first part of my keynote, why people don't like it. And you can think of it as your human body, your human mind is always looking for equilibrium, always looking for balance.
Hmm.
And so anything that creates something that pulls you out of that balance, it's hard. And, you know, a change can also change your identity. So you're used to doing one thing in the organization and being one thing in the organization, and suddenly it's something different.
Hmm.
So even something as wonderful as agile, you know, software development and all the wonderful claims about it, which are in large part true, but it changes what people do.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would anybody really like that, you know, when they're rocking and rolling just fine with what they want to do? And sometimes it's about the leader of change. The leader is not the kind of person that is communicating well or connecting well with the people. And it can also be about the fact that people are tied to the old way.
Yeah.
And so they see a lot of value in the old way. And when you're going through the process of change, all those things go wrong. And they saw the old way as being perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've created something that isn't perfect because it's in the process of becoming something. So they'll complain about that. So there are many reasons people create, you know, chaos. They create some of the chaos, and the chaos is created during times of change. But the bottom line is, It's not about the processes and the technologies, but the new processes, the new technologies. It's about the people. I mean, that's really what you have to manage is the people and understand them and help them care about what you're talking about.
Yeah. And is it also about the fear of the uncertainty?
Fear of the unknown. Yeah. So a lot of the psychologists will say everything comes down to fear. And all of the actions that you take in your life and the negative actions, reactions that you have are all about fear of this or fear of that. So my work is called Fear Less Change. And that doesn't mean that you should live your life without fear, but it's less fear. So it's about the leader being able to manage that fear and help people through that fear and hopefully create less fear. And so this morning I was talking about skeptics, and the thing about skeptics is they provide a particular kind of fear in that if you are leading the change, you're most likely, whether you want to admit it or not, you are afraid of the skeptics, afraid of the people resisting you. Why wouldn't you? And they're in your, they could be like in your face complaining about things. So you fear them and they fear you because you're bringing in something new.
Yeah.
So there's this back and forth fear going on, and then it just comes to a standstill.
Yeah.
But there are ways to manage that. And there are ways to help the skeptics and other people who are not as skeptical but still struggling to go through the change. Because if you don't manage the people, if they don't feel seen and heard, your change is constantly going to be ambushed.
I think a lot of people who hear this podcast can identify with this situation. So that the leader wants some change, and maybe we or another one of the team is very skeptical about this, and that it gets up a conflict, and then still stand, and nobody moves anymore. So how can we overcome this? Do you have some tips for us?
Yeah, there's a lot of tips. So one of the things that you have to recognize is that change is very emotional for people, and people take it personally. And I think the first error that companies make is they talk about the change in how it's going to help the organization. And that makes sense. You, of course, want to do that. But people are thinking about how it's going to affect them personally. And while if we have an organization of 10,000 people, we can't go around and talk with each person about how the change is going to affect them, there's more that leaders can do to talk about change at more of a micro level, how it will affect each person. So I think that's one of the big things that leaders of change need to understand. And then, of course, there is the dealing with the skeptics and how to use the skeptics. And the skeptics can provide valuable information. People think, okay, she's going to talk about how to persuade the skeptics, how to bring them over to our side. And that can take a lot of time. And that can take a lot of time to do things that are never going to happen. They may never be persuaded. But the skeptics are seeing things that you aren't seeing because you're all excited about the change and you're seeing the value in the change, and the skeptics are not seeing it that way. So we can actually put the skeptics on our team and ask them periodically, what's wrong? What are we missing? And so then they feel heard, so they're not as likely to ambush. And they're also, you're treating them with respect, and they may not even be as likely to complain. So when it comes right down to it, change is a very emotional thing, and we tend to talk about it as just a cognitive thing. Give people information, and then give them more information, and then give them more information. And then people just push back on that information because the information is against what they believe should happen. And then people throw their arms up in defeat and say, oh, they just don't understand, or they just don't get it, and or they're just being stubborn, or they're digging in their heels. And the truth is, we're giving the information, and we're probably doing a good job of that, but we're not taking the next step to help them care about the information. And there's a variety of techniques that you can use to to pin into the emotional side of what people are not only thinking, that's the information side, but also what they are feeling. Yeah. So creating more of an emotional connection with people. And I know that sounds kind of woo-woo-y, and it also sounds kind of scary to do in the workplace. What, you want to create an emotional connection? But for example, there's one technique called Imagine That, where you bring people in a room and you start, you ask two questions. And the first question is, how are things going? What do you see out there? And you might narrow it down to some particular area.
Yeah.
And then people just start discussing it, you know, and all the problems, and they bring up their own problems. They give themselves a little wake-up call on what's going on. And then after you get them talking about that, you feel, okay, they really understand that there are problems around here.
Yeah.
Then the second thing you say is, okay, what would happen if we did X? And X is the change, the new idea, you know, that you want to bring in. And then you get them starting to think about imagine that, possibilities. And so there, I've seen magic happen when you do something like that. It's because, first of all, you're not telling them anything. You're asking questions. And as they're discussing it, they're feeling it. The first question got them to feel the angst. And the second question got them to feel the possibilities and maybe the idea that, oh, wait, we can make things better. See, so that's an emotional connection strategy that has nothing to do with giving them a bunch of PowerPoints.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I saw it in the past of my projects where the last 20 years where some companies get agile and doing agile work, a lot of the testers and the quality people say, oh, no, we have to do our tests and so. And some agile people just said, yeah, you don't get it. You don't get agile. We are doing this. And there was a lot of missing emotional connection, as you said. And so I can really feel it, how good it feels to get involved in such a process. Yeah,
you can also tell a story. So, and it doesn't have to be a true story, you know, I mean, as long as you're clear about that it's not, but a story that that person can relate to and feel it, feel the story, and just make up something. So, well, suppose you blah, 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 or here's a story of John who did this, this, and this. Do you relate to John, you know? So the thing about stories is people can feel them and repeat them and remember them, unlike a bunch of bullet points on a PowerPoint slide. So that's another way you can get an emotional connection rather than just a cognitive one.
This is often driven or a good tool maybe for leaders and for project managers. But what if I am the skeptical in this process? What can I do?
Right. Well, first of all, these techniques can be used by anybody. We talk about powerless leaders in Fearless Change books. You know, these are not people who necessarily have been given the power to make change, but these are just people with good ideas, and they can use these strategies. And then your second question was...
If I am the skeptic.
Yeah. What's funny, I had someone stop me after the keynote this morning, and he was very frustrated that he is the skeptic in the organization. And he's constantly, and it was his words, you know, talking about things, the challenges that he sees and the problems he sees. And he doesn't feel he's being listened to. So after a while of listening to him, I thought, okay, I'm not a psychologist here. But what I'm seeing is he's presenting a lot of problems. And it's clear that his managers or whoever he's talking to are not listening to him. I get that, and that's frustrated, you know. And then I joked, I said, well, maybe you could buy them a copy of Fearless Change. But that was just kind of a joke because I thought even if they read it, or they may not believe that they need to do this, or they may not even read it. But what I told him is, I think what you're doing is you're staying too much in problem space. You're constantly... And you're expecting the people that you're talking to take what you're giving them and create solutions from that. And so what would happen if you had some kind of concrete solution or even semi-concrete solution and say, look, I know I've been complaining about this, this, and this. Well, here's a possibility for solving it. So you can almost see the other side of whatever this guy is going through in that the people that he's talking to are just constantly being presented with new problems from him. And that's going to wear on them. So they probably aren't as responsive. And it's probably because he's just staying in problem space and not talking enough about, so here's what we could potentially do. What do you think about that?
I think if you stay a lot of in this problem space, you're always seen as a problem person and a negative person. So I think there's not much communication possible if I go to you and can say, I always think about that. I now get all your problems, and I don't want to talk about with you about solutions. Yes. So I think it's a good part if I recognize that I'm a skeptic person, that I bring the solutions within the communication. Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, that's kind of sad that whoever he's talking to doesn't realize that he has a piece of the puzzle that they don't have. And sometimes I've been told that when people complain and they're actually given that role of a champion skeptic to provide information on things that we might be missing, they don't find it as fun to complain anymore because they've been given this role of, okay, you're the official champion skeptic, you know, on the team. And so... you know, I kind of felt for that guy, but I encouraged him to just think more about providing some solutions.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like a bad situation all around.
Yeah, true. You talked about the powerless leaders. Can you explain it more? What do you mean with that?
So my impression is that when I go in to do presentations, people think I'm talking only to the managers or the CIO people or the CEO people. And one of the first interviews we did when we were early days of writing the book was with a chief information officer. And I was all excited because I thought, oh, wow, she's going to have all this wisdom, you know, on helping people get through change. And she said something really interesting. She says, I have no more power to change people's minds. Mm. Well, what she said is to rewire people's minds than a 19-year-old intern who's coming into an organization for the first time and sees a need for change.
Yeah.
So that's when we started playing around with the term of powerless leaders. If you haven't been given the power to make the change happen, you have just as much ability to make the change happen as someone who has been given that power. Because sometimes people that have been given the power just dictate the change.
Mm-hmm.
None of your listeners are like that. But, you know, there are those people out there. They just dictate the change. And so then there's all this dissatisfaction floating around. Whereas bottom-up change sticks better.
Mm.
And so the tools that we have in Fearless Change are all about those. How do we get change to happen from the bottom up?
Mm.
From the bottom up. And leaders can use it from the top down, too. Mm. But that's where the term powerless leader comes from.
Ah, great. So do you have another method or tool we can use to get in more in this communication part? One example from maybe for our business areas?
Yeah, I also like the strategy we call shoulder to cry on. It sounds a little woo-woo, but... it's really not. I think a lot of people forget that anytime there's a change, any change, you gain something and you lose something.
Mm.
Everybody, no matter what the change is, you're gaining and you're losing. And people that are leading the change tend to talk about, this is all the things we're going to gain. And they'll say, this is what the organization is going to gain. And if they're enlightened, they'll remember that you're supposed to talk about personally what people will gain. And so they do that. That's good, but they forget to acknowledge what people will lose.
Yeah.
And so there may be nothing they can do about it, but the act of just acknowledging by saying, look, Fred, I realize that this is going to be a different level of expertise for you, and you're going to have to spend a lot of time learning it, and you've got these other things going on in your life, and we recognize that, and we really appreciate that. Mm. That's so rare for leaders to do that.
Yeah.
And that can go a long way.
Mm.
And again, that's a way to create an emotional connection, to recognize that your people are people, and they are not robots, and they have these emotions. Mm. And so you don't have to get into anything that makes you uncomfortable, but just think, in the shoulder to cry on, you're just acknowledging that they have some angst going on. Mm. That goes a long way.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I think it's great to look more on the people and this process and on the emotion of change. I think that's a new view for a lot of people in the business area. So I'm very happy to be giving this talk now to our podcast follow us here.
Uh-huh.
We will recognize your book in the show notes.
Okay.
Can you tell the name?
The first book was Fearless Change, mm-hmm. and the second book is More Fearless Change. More Fearless Change, Strategies for Making Your Ideas Happen.
Oh, great. Yeah. So we will link it in the show notes.
Okay.
And thank you very much for this interview.
You're welcome, and thank you. I really appreciate it. It was fun talking with you.
For me too. And I wish you a safe travel home.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.